Well, for me, growing up, we had a whole lot of terms involving violence. You know, like whether a fight would be or whether something like that would be. You know, parts of it where that some certain Yiddish words got into it for that. What was the case for you?
What do you mean?
Like, for example, would you, if is there a word that you would have used for giving someone a kick in the shin? Or, for example, for us, we had the term of hitting someone on the leg very hard as giving them a Charlie
a
horse.
Charlie horse,
Right.
No, that's
What does
come out
that mean?
before.
I have no idea. Well, I know what it means, but I don't know where it comes from. But in any case.
I don't think we had any exclusively
Did you have
local.
We had Chinese terms. Burns.
Oh, yeah, we had Chinese burns too.
Uh-huh.
But did you have a special name for them?
Chinese burn
Chinese
sounds
burns.
Pretty special to me.
Oh, you don't know what Chinese burn
could
is?
You tell
Give
me
them a Chinese burn.
No, I'm saying there was a particular when you know, like when you
I know how to do a
arm.
Chinese bun. Would you like one?
Would you tell me how it is accomplished?
You can hold with two hands of the person's wrist, twist one way and the other way. And it is very sore. Would you
yes.
like to try it?
No, I'm quite familiar. We call that an Indian sunburn.
Indian sunburn.
Interesting.
We call that Chinese bun.
Uh-huh.
But I was thinking when you said about I can't think of any physical tortures or things that we had particular names for.
Half Nelson?
That's a judo thing, isn't it? But you had things like you were going to get loudy if you're going to get smacked when you get home.
No.
Or get into a terrible row. I always thought loudy involved some physical violence. I don't know. Maybe not. Just a row.
You can give something loudy.
Beating it. Or doing it really hard.
Doing it excessively.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember for various sports or things. What would you call it? Somebody pulled your hair or anything. You didn't have a particular. We didn't have a terribly violent culture, as I recall. You would spell it out, you know, you say he kicked him in the shin. Or he.
You didn't have a term. Like, for example, we might have in the US the term like a shellacking or a hiding or something like that.
Well, getting loudy would be getting a terrible one.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think. Can't remember. My mother will kill me.
Right.
I can't remember.
That
anything.
Sounds quite tame.
It does, but yeah, by these standards. No, I can't remember.
How often was there a public fight when you were in school? Because we were talking about that last night, you know,
very,
people having a scrap.
Quite often and quite ritualised.
Did everybody sort of gather round while it was going on?
Yes. And I think there was some information sometimes passed before you went out on the bell.
Yes.
That there was going to be
a fight.
I
remember the prior announcement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in those days, it would be a case of just outside the school, you know, or almost in the school grounds. It could be on the way out, you know. Not in the school, not in the playground, but maybe in the field, and maybe going down the road. And it was no business of the teachers.
Right.
You know, nobody was going to say, move along, you lot. And it was very Marquess of Queensbury.
Oh, really?
This may just be my school.
Uh-huh.
It probably was just my school.
Mm.
But it would be a fair fight.
Mm-hmm.
And the group, you would always know there was a fight because of a gang of people all standing in the circus was on, and you know, there was if somebody did a false move, like no kicking, none of that stuff.
No kicking,
no
all.
Kicking. It was fisticuffs. It was a fist fight.
Uh-huh.
Like I say, it was like boxing.
Mm-hmm.
There was no poking them in the eyes, and it really was quite. It was quite civilized fighting with onlookers, who would pull you up if you. I remember one of my friends actually weighing in when her brother was fighting.
Right.
You know, she thought there had been a false move and she was in there to get the guy off.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to say, you're not going to believe this. Because it sounds so, it was maybe a false memory too, but there was a degree of honour involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can remember, you know, things being done that were seen as sort of inappropriate moves or, you know...
Uh-huh.
Seen as a kind of a punching somebody at the wrong moment or taking advantage of something the wrong way. But I could hardly ever see what was going on because there was such a crowd of people all pressed around.
It was over very quickly as well. Yeah. And I really have no recollection of how they decided who the victor was or, you know, who was goody and who was baddie or anything like that. It was just, it was almost like an old-fashioned honour thing. We are going to have a fight and I'm not going to back down. And they had their fight and it was ritualised and end of story. You know, there wasn't a follow-up usually.
It didn't start with them hitting each other with gloves or anything.
As not quite that.
But that constitutes a duel. I mean,
it was almost like a duel.
It's delayed, you're not fighting right away, in which case it's just a fight.
You're not creeping up behind somebody.
And there is a code of conduct.
Yeah.
So how did the ritual end?
That's what I can't quite remember. The crowd would disperse. Somebody might be lying on the ground. Or somebody might just say they'd had enough, or the crowd might say they'd had enough.
Yeah. When I remember them, they were usually on school premises, which meant that they were interrupted fairly quickly on most occasions.
Ours were usually outside of jurisdiction. If they were, we didn't have a playground supervision. So if there was a fight during playtime, that was the other honour thing. If there was a fight during playtime, A, the teacher didn't want to know. B, nobody wanted to tell them.
Yeah.
So it was our thing. It was part of being your child thing.
But it would be allowed to sort of play out in its own way.
Well, they couldn't care less. And I have to say, and again, you might not believe this, but nobody ever got terribly badly injured. There was a cut-off point.
Right, yeah.
Whereas I've seen children now, don't start my grumpy old woman thing, but I know children now who don't have a borderline, you know, who don't have a boundary.
Don't know when to stop.
They don't know when to stop, and people don't know how to stop them. And they would do something in a rage.
Right.
This would not be quite like that. It would be done in cold blood, as a rule. A formal fight.
Yeah.
For some kind of principle, and there was a boundary. There were no weapons.
Yeah,
you wouldn't creep up on them afterwards and say, "I'm going to get you now." But this, I'm talking about a middle class environment where people were still getting messages from the previous generation about how you did things.
But it was reasonable. I mean, it wasn't too homogenous. Now you say
I'm talking about childhood too.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about teenage fights.
But it was still kind of the local catchment as such, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a school.
Yeah.
But you knew everybody in the village.
It wasn't a private school, is what I'm saying.
Not at all. Yeah. But you knew everybody in the town.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And even later on, in teenage, where you might have a larger pool.
I was going to ask kind of.
Well, you wouldn't have the duel type fight. But I think there was still a degree of honour. That people were despised if they used tactics that were considered, you know.
Was it still happening when you went to Air Academy? Was there still that sort of...
What, did they have fights outside Air Academy?
Yeah, was there still...
Not to my remembrance.
Right. Yeah.
That's a good one. Not that I can remember. But then I went to Air Academy in my fourth year, and we had nothing to do with the people younger than that.
Right, yeah.
We were grown out of fighting by that age, really. I mean, the population of the school, I don't think they settled their arguments with blows, but there were certainly plenty of fights going on in the town.
Right, yeah. So I graduated to...
Yeah, but what was considered a dirty fight, there was such a thing then as a dirty fight. Now, it appears to me, you know, it's just you do anything you can in order to get this guy off you.
Yeah, I was a bit of a stranger to it myself, I must admit. It was just maybe sort of twice a year there would be a big playground fight and...
Looking back...
A lot of threats more than actual violence.
But looking back, it was not a violent society.
Yeah.
It really wasn't. What was going on behind closed doors, we don't know.
Right.
Like that guy said. That was what you did at home. Guy would come home on Friday night and beat up his wife. Who knows? But certainly, children there were minor acts of violence.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't, you know, your brother would hit you.
Mm. What about vandalism? Was there any vandalism much?
Don't get me started. I didn't know that such a thing existed in our society. And I'm not talking about cities.
Yeah. Do you think that's because there was more employment? And, you know, people weren't sort of hanging about with
them. I think it was because people were respectful of authority, far more respectful and afraid of authority. Yeah. Also, as I have said to you before, the war had just finished.
Yeah.
There had been so much vandalism.
That's true. Yeah. Different scale vandalism.
That people didn't want to see things getting knocked down because they'd been knocked down. They wanted to see them being built again. Yeah. There was a definite fear of destroying things, you know. Right. You didn't get off with it, and you would have got into serious bother. And as you pointed out one time, you didn't have spray paint. But the thing
and
is
convenience
tools. People scratched on desks,
yeah,
you know, you're on an old wooden desk, but that added to its patina. Enhanced it. You got writing in public lavatories, but nothing like somebody would write a wee message on the door of the changing room in the swimming pool.
Would you get a dialogue going from one person writing?
Well, maybe a wee bit. I think I might remember a little bit of that. Nothing clever. You know, I won't say the rude ones, but you know, so and so is a, and then no, she isn't. Hi, she is.
Yeah.
But there was graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say there wasn't the kind of graffiti you get now.
Yeah.
And as I have said to you before, there were public lavatories that were open day and night that didn't need an attendant.
Mm-hmm.
There were shelters along the beach that were not vandalised. The windows weren't smashed. They weren't graffitied. It was probably a reaction to destruction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also people didn't let their kids do things like that.
Mm.
And it's kids that do it.
Yeah. It's funny because I don't really think of, you know, this place not being bombed as such.
Mm.
I don't really associate it with that kind of destruction in the war.
No, but every dad in the place had been somewhere bombing or been bombed.
But you had tape over the windows, I was going to say, in these old photographs. So there
Which
was,
old photographs?
Photographs from the war.
From this area?
Yes. I think so, unless I'm wrong.
Well, we've got photographs of windows being taped up down.
Did you not do that here?
I wasn't in the war.
We'll blame you anyway.
We have photographs of taped up windows. Well, I don't think, you know, I think in areas that were likely to be... Area,
maybe I'm mixed up. I'm probably thinking of a different place.
There's a photograph of my mother
sitting
in our home down in wherever they were, Chelmsford or somewhere, I can't remember.
Oh, I see. So that's,
and they had tapes on
they
the
They were more genuinely worried about
Well, south of England,
bombs,
and, you know,
right.
they were quite likely to be bombed.
Uh-huh.
But...
They would have had blackouts, though, wouldn't they? I mean, that was a... Universal
I mean, everybody was very aware.
Yeah. But that's what I mean, that there would have been events in your life that would have brought it home
there
to
was
you
an,
much more
There was
readily,
an aerodrome
so. Yes.
in Prestwick.
Uh-huh.
It was a target.
Yeah.
I went to a thing, did I tell you? A talk about growing up in Prestwick during the war.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about, a lot of it was about the aerodrome, about aircraft, which was very interesting to the men. It was interesting. But... they showed us, you know, the Germans had aerial maps of the entire place, the whole country.
Yeah.
Very, what am I trying to say? Very
detailed
maps of the whole place. And he showed us some of the ones that they got later of this area, because there was an aerodrome here.
Yeah, yeah.
With American Air Force people here later. Quite a bit later. But it could easily have been a target.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were...
did you not have things along the beach?
There were
there
were things to prevent invasion.
Right, yeah.
And in the street, would you... I didn't know this.
Mm.
He showed us photographs of things that I thought were like drain covers in the street,
mm-hmm.
were the remains of things to stop tanks coming through.
Oh, for goodness
sake. In the event of an invasion. Blimey. And every coastal area was vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know there's the remains of that wee sort of watchtower thing
uh-huh.
on the corner on the of the golf course. Mm-hmm. You know, there's mm-hmm. a wee sort of kind of broken bits of cement where yeah. there would have been a wee...
When we were kids, I can't remember this clearly, but we thought it had been an air raid shelter, but obviously don't build an air raid shelter on top of a hill.
Exactly.
Looking yeah. out to sea. No, it would have been an observation point.
Yeah.
But remember those big circular things that we found when the tide was way out?
Oh, yeah, you still see them.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, they were where the sort of stanchions had been for the blocking right. things against enemy... sea craft.
I'm sure I've seen an old photograph of that at some point, mm-hmm. you know, with them actually built mm-hmm. up so that you could see how they worked.
But there wasn't an area, there wasn't a place in this country
mm.
that people were not aware of impending invasion.
Yeah. But that's so alien now, you know, the thought of something actually flying over you and blowing you up.
Not just flying over you.
Yeah.
I mean, they were anticipating an invasion.
Mm.
It was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it could have come by sea, it could have come by air,
mm-hmm.
it could have come by, you know, people that you didn't know very well moving.
Yeah. Right.
It was impending,
yeah.
and they were warned and they were terrified of it.
And they had all the fences, all the metal... sort of garden railings cut down
that's
for the war.
Well, that was to use for weapons. I don't know if that's strictly true, actually. I don't know if they were all
used,
employed in that way.
Well, what, they were all cut down, didn't
they? Well,
they
were taken away.
There's
stumps
all around the town mm-hmm. where the railings used to be.
Some people I heard, this may be apocryphal,
mm.
some people had beautiful gates, you know, iron gates.
Wasn't that the case when... Nanny's house supposed to be, they buried the gates.
That's what they said, they buried the gates so that nobody would take them off for
no war
making
effort
weapons
here.
From. I don't know whether that's true or not.
Yeah.
But nobody got away with it, you know, everybody was scared of it.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think after the war, the kind of mindset was not towards damaging things.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you've been terribly damaged yourself, in which case you might have wanted to.
Mm.
To damage things, but I think everybody was exhausted and wanted to keep things nice.
Yeah. But there was more employment then as well.
I don't think employment and vandalism are necessarily related in any way.
No.
Not really.
Lots vandalism has to about do with no prospects and nothing to do.
The people who vandalise some of the time, in my experience, are not even of employment age.
Mm.
They could be sitting reading a book, which is what we were told to do when we were bored. Why don't you go and read a book?
Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's a stage of behaviour. It's like little children behaving badly, only they're not little children anymore.
Yeah.
Or it could be rage.
Mm.
The best possible thing you could say about it would be it's justified rage.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And then you get weird things like that whole carry on in France where something just sort of escalates to the point where it's...
Oh, there's copycat too.
You know, but it gets sort of out of control. You know, you lose the point of what the protest might have been about.
And it gets hijacked. It gets hijacked by people who just want to break things.
Yeah.
But
where is it?
I think that always happens with everything. It gets hijacked
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
with a good idea and a bad idea.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't lovely. But there were revolutions going on in 1968 in France
mm-hmm.
and all over the place. Did it happen in America? Yeah, on campuses.
Did, yes.
Mm. I suppose you had the whole Vietnam thing as well.
Anti-Vietnam demonstrations, mm-hmm. National Guard shooting folk. And
exactly, the issue of as much of what does, when is the government protecting you and when is it making you feel scared or threatened?
Mm. You know, when Laurie was in, we were talking about Singapore.
Right, yeah.
And she was saying how when they were there, it felt wonderfully safe and clean and pleasant. And she has a daughter who's very up for people's rights and the environment and everything else. It's a psychological one. And when Laurie told her, it was lovely, you know, it was, you felt you could walk anywhere, you felt so safe, and people were so polite, and it was really nice. And she said, but at the expense of people's civil liberties. You know, it's a repressive regime. But we were, well, I was thinking, you know, there has to be a kind of happy medium where you're protected, but at the same time, you can express yourself a little.
Yeah, it depends on how
very it's done. Little.
The problem when you're a tourist as well is that you probably don't get to see the poverty.
Well, that's why I said that about the fabulously cheap clothing and the, you know, how they can have it done like that. What are they paying the people that are doing that? And that was when she mentioned, you know, there is the other side to it. And when you said that about the vandalism, we did have a much more repressive... Do you know, it wasn't a repressive regime. It was a repressive mindset.
Right, yeah.
Just families culturally imposed it.
Predisposed to be different.
It was a cultural repression.
Although,
I mean, what were they going to do to you? You weren't going to get any worse punishment. The village policeman, as he was, that everybody knew. You know, you talked to him, you respected him, you didn't shout names at him the way they do now. You didn't make fun of him like they do now. And he would take his little notebook out. Like, he caught me in the golf course one day. And you weren't supposed to be. It's private property.
How old were you?
On the right of way, about 9. And out came the wee book, you know, and the pretend, you know, what's your name again?
Digging down your details.
And the biggest fear you had was that he would go and tell your parents that you'd been doing something wrong.
And your parents would mind that you had been doing this.
Then again, you might come from a family where your parents would beat the living daylights out of you. So there was a, you know, there was a definite downside to the conformity.
Yes.
But on the other hand, people were actually, they were... the only word is afraid, really. They were afraid to break the law. Normal people, I'm not talking about criminals. They weren't afraid. But there were criminals and there were normal people. Now, it seems to me, there are a lot more people who are who wouldn't call themselves criminals.
You mean criminals like career criminals?
Yeah,
like,
well,
that was their way of operating.
Well, they were criminals. That was their life.
Yeah.
But now you have people who are not criminals who are quite prepared to break the law when it suits them. Or not career criminals, shall we say.
It's just a hobby.
I don't know. I suppose it was always like this. But I could swear on a stack of Bibles that vandalism just didn't happen in this town when I was growing up.
Right, yeah.
Now,
it's a smaller town.
It was a small town, and everybody knew everybody. And everybody knew the village. I keep saying village, it was a town, but it was a small town. Everybody knew him. And he came into the school, and he was liked, actually.
I suppose in a way there's so much sort of setting people up to knock them down nowadays as well. You know, that anybody that's famous, anybody in the media, anybody's got any sort of, you know, role that makes them seem to have some sort of aura about them means that they are instantly worth chucking things at the same time, which I don't like. I don't like that us and them culture, you know, like there's the famous people and there's us, you know, or there's the politicians and there's us, like never the twain, you know. I get frustrated with that because...
Well,
I hate that sort of senseless knocking things about just because
it was a long time.
You're frustrated and you feel like it. You know, it's so unproductive.
It was a long time before I understood people who had a particular attitude to the police. Because, as I say, I grew up with a friendly police. And I lived a life that didn't involve me being at the wrong end of their interests.
Again, it's like places in the States where either there's so many laws and so many fiddly wee laws that, you know, well, you know, don't litter here, don't drive over this really low speed by our standards. Yes. And it seems like you're almost inevitably going to be slightly over the mark once in a while, and so you're always afraid of the police.
Well, there are two sides to that, of course, and then the police are also afraid of you, which makes them, as armed people,
well, then more to be concerned about issues.
Yeah. You're very concerned about not making the police feel afraid of you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like if you're taking out your driving license from inside your coat.
Everything, you have to think it through, every move you make, every word you speak.
Mm-hmm.
But having grown up with that pleasant, and having been taught that the police were my friends,
mm-hmm.
because then they were my friends because I belonged to the law-abiding middle class, I suppose, who didn't break the law. But, you know, I learned from people who had bad experiences, you know, like somebody whose son, because he was young, driving his dad's car, got pulled up, and, you know, the sort of questions that they asked him.
Sort of unnecessarily hard
time. Or, you know, later on, black people who had bad experiences just because they were driving a car or something like that. And that was, you know, it all depends on the experience that you have personally. And I'm talking about what my perception was.
Right.
That this was a very safe and law-abiding sort of area. It seemed, looking back, it certainly seems very safe to me.
Well, even in my teens, I still felt that the police were people I could approach. I wasn't, I wasn't afraid of them, but I knew a lot of people who had, you know, maybe had something in their car they shouldn't have had when they were stopped, or, you know,
wait a minute, though. They were maybe breaking the law.
Well, yes, but my point wasn't that. My point was that I knew people who were more afraid of the police. Not so much because they broke the law themselves, but because they had been with somebody which had made them suspicious. I don't mean that. I mean, you know, they were young and they were out and they were doing something, and so they were treated with suspicion for, you know.
Do you think that the community here is as homogenous now?
No.
So do you think that that diversity has created a challenge
to this? Absolutely. And there are advantages and disadvantages like everything else. You know, it's like being in a really cosmopolitan place has huge advantages.
Yeah.
But it also has disadvantages in that you don't all have the same expectations, you don't all have the same standards,
yeah.
you don't all have the same attitudes, and I don't like the idea of, you know, we were talking earlier about an elderly people's bit, you know, like an elderly people's community, which sounds quite nice for a minute or two if you're elderly, you know, almost like a gated community where you're, everybody's keeping their garden nice and everybody's law-abiding and they don't play loud music and all that. And then really that isn't, that's not what it's all about, is it? That's not what life is. And it's one of those things that when you're being assailed, you think, wouldn't it be nice if everybody here was like me? But when, you know, when you want a bit of life,
a bit of diversity.
Yes. Yeah. Or I think that's where the danger is for tolerance. You know, I was talking about kids earlier.
Yeah.
How difficult it is if you really don't particularly want to be around children. But children are actually extremely important members of the community. And if you exclude them entirely from your life, then your life is less rich than it is if you include them. And it's the same with different races and different nationalities, etc.
I think the diversity thing can have funny knock-on effects. Like you were saying about, you know, a small community where everybody knows each other, that the businesses all know who you are.
That's right.
So if you're getting your messages or something that, there was no question of where you came from or, you know, why do you want this?
That's
or,
right.
Why am I doing this?
No child or nobody underage could go in the off-licence and buy drink.
Right.
Because everybody knew who you were.
Yes.
They knew what age you were.
Yeah.
They knew your father.
So, that, I mean, that's one area where just the size of the place, not who the people are or where they come from, but the size of the place can make a difference. I mean, I remember, it's a kind of stupid example, but when I lived here, when I lived at home, there was a whole lot of times where, you know, I was contributing to phone bills and things like that, and I sort of took it for granted that that was how it worked. And I remember when I moved out...
It's an unusual teenager.
Well, used quite a lot of the phone time. But when I moved out, when I was first moved into a separate flat where I was dealing with my own bills for the first time, I can remember sort of phoning up BT and saying, oh, you know, I'd like to set this up and blah, blah, blah. And they were sort of like, well, we'll give you a limit of £100 and you're not allowed to go over this. And, you know, there were all these restrictions because to them, I was a faceless new customer. And to me, I sort of thought, well, hang on, I'm used to a different set of conventions to do with sort of, you know, like you having built up lots of years service with them. And I found that really strange that, you know, suddenly it was all sort of alien and inconvenient and, you know, and it's just a business, you know, it's not really a big deal, but it makes you feel that wee bit more alienated from the stuff around you.
But that's why people are so offended when they've been working for somebody for hundreds of years and they're suddenly made redundant as if they had never, you know, had no importance.
Yes.
Because it is a big faceless on, they've given their loyalty. And they thought they mattered and they were just a tiny little number.
But if you do know people, then there's almost a sort of, you know, natural sense of community.
It has its ups and its downs,
yes.
And it's, there's nothing nicer, I think, for most human beings than to feel that everybody knows your name. You know, that you've
got
in
a role in
people
place.
Will notice if you're not there.
Yeah.
But then it's got the downside of, if you don't want to be there that one time, you don't want people coming asking you why you're not there. So it's swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, the blue rinse twitching behind the curtains.
Oh, yes,
and, all that sort
and
of
people,
thing.
You know, noticing what you're buying in the grocer shop, you know, and, or having to, like, we used to phone up an order of stuff, and, you know, if you're buying 6 bottles of vodka, they might say, oh, that is strange.
We're having a party this weekend, madam.
Yes, a packet of Twiglets as well. To cover. But, you know, there maybe isn't a happy medium. Maybe there's no such thing as a happy medium.
When we lived in an English village, if we had gone to the butcher, and then he would see us getting a takeaway, he would ask us why.
Yes, precisely. I thought you bought 6 pork chops this morning. Why do you need a takeaway? Are you having guests? Yeah, you lose your anonymity, but you know, you pay the price. I think as I get older, I kind of like losing my anonymity. I think when you're young and vibrant or you've got something to hide, it's lovely. It's lovely to live. Well, I can tell you, when I started teaching, I did not like living near my school. Because we did have parties.
Right.
We had people round till 4 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes we played loud music. And I didn't want to live where parents would say, oh, there's that woman that has the loud parties and the loose people coming to our house on Saturday nights.
Yeah.
We were only having fun. But at that time you had to be seen to be a respectable member of society. Now, I wouldn't care if my children were living next door to me, because my life is so boring. Because we don't have that lifestyle anymore.
But it's more litigious now as well, you know, that if they did think you were doing something, they would probably...
they might lose you your job.
Make a fuss about it. Like you and that mouth spray thing, you know, the breath freshener.
Oh, the child that said that I was drinking out of a vodka bottle.
Yeah, because you had that wee...
did you hear that?
Squishy thing.
And it was a breath spray because I had been smoking.
That's quite scary, though, that, you know, somebody can witness something and then suddenly it's a big deal. And
the child's word is always taken before yours.
Right, yes, yeah. Mind you, the times...
Well, that was in the classroom.
When I think about it, the times that I've thought, you know, oh, I recognise that person from somewhere else, or I think, you know, that they're carrying something when they're not carrying that at all. You know, I think my own judgement is
I'd be a rotten witness. I would be the worst witness, and, you know, things like cars... what kind of car they were driving.
Mm-hmm.
Woo! It was a white one. I think.
And it's so easy when you've got a mental image of something, it's so easy to be convinced that there's no alternative to that. And you think, no, yeah, that's what was there, that's what I saw, that's what I remember.
Some people are far better witnesses than others.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're more observant, but yeah, because my observance, is that the right word? My observation is so poor. I assume everybody else's is just as poor.
Right.
You know, yeah, they're just as likely to have made a mistake as mm-hmm. I have, as I am.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't trust me as a witness for anything.
I wouldn't trust myself. No, I don't think so.